This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm Michael Levin. I'm a writer, publisher, and author publicist. Need a fun satirical read? My new Cider and Ale Chronicles box set is now available on Amazon. Today we're joined with William Tattoo, author of The Hotel of Madness. And we're back with fantasy author William Tattoo, author of Hotel of Madness, which is book one in the Boy King series, which is a trilogy, if I'm correct. Right, William?
I'm not sure it's a trilogy, but I'm working on the second book.
Okay, awesome. So we like to always start these interviews with a couple of fun questions that are a little off the writing path. So my first question is, if you could meet any writer, living or dead, who would it be and why?
Ooh, that's a hard question. You know what? I like to meet Kay Applegate. I spent a good amount of my, I guess when everyone else was reading Harry Potter, and I also read Harry Potter as well, but I was way more into like series like Animorphs and her other series. I'm forgetting the name of, but it's about basically these kids being teleported into this world where basically all the mythological creatures and gods exist, and they exist in their classic form. So like there's no punches held when it comes to bad things happening. So I like to just talk to her and like pick her brain to see, like, because she's extremely prolific when she was like really active. So I don't know. I like to talk to her one day.
Awesome. Awesome. Sounds cool. So, and then my other question is, are you a cat person or a dog person?
Definitely a dog person.
Oh, nice. Yeah, me too. I've had both before. I had cats before I had kids, and I really thought they were family until I had kids and a dog, and then I realized that I formed a much stronger attachment to my dog. It's a different type of energy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have a German Shepherd and a pit mix, and they're both sweethearts, pretty much. All they want to do is play with each other or try to tackle me or, they're running up to you. They're running up to you to sniff you and to get you to pet them and try to lick your face. That's pretty much it. That's the whole thing you want.
All the love. They just want to, it's really kind of amazing. It's like you don't realize until you've had a dog, because I had never really had a dog up until last year, what kind of love and like real family member they become. And that's when you start thinking about, oh, I only have like 10 to 12 years with this guy. You know what I mean? And it's you know, sort of the type of thing you need to come to grips with. But nevertheless, let's talk a little bit about your beginnings. At what point did you know that you wanted to write a book? Because I know you had mentioned, I did a print interview with you where you kind of mentioned that you you don't know if you really, you're just starting out. You feel like you don't know if you would classify yourself as a writer just yet because you had some involvement in writing for video games or something like that. Am I on the right track here, sort of?
So I'll put it to you this way. I guess when I was like in high school / middle school, I always wrote like short stories that, you know, hopefully are burning somewhere. as I got older and I wanted to become a game designer, I decided to like, you know, write little stories and backstories for like, you know, things I want to actually make when I, you know, learned to craft. I didn't end up becoming a game designer. So a lot of these stories kind of, like, you know, stay off in the woods somewhere. But that's when I initially realized, like, you know, a lot of the effort that I put into basically writing the background or the setting for a lot of these, you know, worlds I wanted to make, can also easily be translated into actual books. So as I got older, I think, let me see here. There's a couple of things that I actually maybe wanted to write. I think H.P. Lovecraft definitely made me want to write. When I read Berserk for the first time, that was also a moment. I'm a big anime nerd, and I think that's also a big inspiration, wanting to become a writer. But I always didn't really consider myself like a professional writer, like a short story guy. A little concept here, a little concept there. Nothing really, you know, big and serious, like a whole book.
So how do you feel about having a real full-fledged novel out in the world?
It's a little terrifying, actually.
Right?
Yeah. It's the one thing for your family and friends who know you and share a lot of your interests with you to read something and go, oh, yeah, that's great. This is like the first time outside of selected strangers, like, you know, just random people go, oh yeah, let me check this out.
I never
thought I would feel that ever.
Yeah, I have a sort of a box set of short novels that just went out into the world recently, and it's definitely game-changing when you start getting reviews from people that you didn't already know, or those people that you kind of don't think, ah, you're just saying that because you're my wife, or you're, you know. So I totally am kind of right there with you at that moment. Tell our audience a little bit about, the overall arching series of The Boy King, and specifically a little bit about the Hotel of Madness.
Ooh, okay. The Boy King started off as a short story about basically a detective who, you know, runs across America or, you know, other countries and solve supernatural cases. Hotel of Madness was basically me taking that character and dropping him into a scenario that may or may not have zombies. Definitely has zombies. But, like, the initial formatting of it was kind of weird for me. It started off as one idea, and it kind of morphed into another. But I enjoy writing this particular character because it leans on a lot of what I like about, like, fiction when I was growing up.
Nice. So here I'll go in this direction, because again, I know that you've mentioned in the past when we've talked that you draw some inspiration in your character foundations from yourself and from people in your personal life and stuff like that. Give me an example of how you do this, like what elements of your main character and your other, I guess, support characters come directly from yourself or from the people in your personal life.
Ooh. So author is, every time I have to, so I work in IT, and every time I had to work with somebody who did something stupid, always, my job is always to get the job done. So he has an air of, I need to get this job done. Like, no matter what it takes, no matter how you're going to feel about it, this is going to be how the job is going to get done. And that's how he approaches pretty much a lot of problems. So he comes off as a little, I guess, arrogant. Which is not a side of myself I pull from often, so it's kind of weird how it shows up, but it is what it is. Secondary character. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, to an extent, you write what you know, so when you're, and generally people know themselves better than anyone else. So I think it's kind of a natural tactic to employ when you're, you know, creating a character to draw some inspiration from yourself, or at least how you would deal with a certain situation if put in a role like that. So I think that's pretty common. I know I've done it with every main character. I write a lot of satirical characters that are not human, that are kind of like talking animals and stuff like that, but that have human characteristics and character traits. And pretty much all of them, all the main characters have some element of me. And I've tried to avoid it, but it just always happens. So, so yeah, tell me about your secondary characters you were going to say.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't realize I was doing this, but I was basing the character that's in the first book where you meet her and she's a nurse and she, you know, goes out of her way to help the main character. And I based a lot of her personality on my big sister, which I play one anyway. And I didn't realize I was doing that until I was like, yeah, pretty much did that. Like, this type of person who's like really approachable, is kind of a natural leader and sees a problem and wants to help. That's like, you know, very viable character traits that I like, and I kind of shoved it all in one person.
Nice. Any particular character in the book that you found particularly challenging to write, or that maybe you needed to deal with kind of specific you know, writer obstacles while writing this character and sort of bringing them out into the world?
Actually, there is a character perspective of the actual Necronomicon. The Necronomicon actually has a personality in this book. And oh, nice. Writing from that perspective was both fun and terrifying, because I'm not sure how it's going to come off to, like, other people. I know it sounds cool to me, but that was a pretty fun perspective that I enjoyed, but also found the most challenging, because it's like, what is the most non-human thing you can write, if not a book?
Right. And that's, and like, Lovecraft is so public domain right now, and there's so many different interpretations of how his work has impacted, you know, various modern forms of horror and dark fantasy. So I imagine that would have been would have been challenging, and also probably would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was that's gonna be I'm still waiting for a response to that one. Like, a lot of the people that I know, kind of, that was probably one of their favorite parts. But I'm kind of interested to see what, you know, what other people feel about it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's actually intriguing me right now, and it's making me want to check the book out just for that reason. I've read a lot of, I've read and worked with a lot of people, actually, that have done, like, Lovecraft, modern Lovecraft anthologies and stuff like that. So that's always super cool. Now, aside from Lovecraft, who, I mean, I obviously know is an influence in your writing, what are some of the other, I guess, you know, not just authors and books, but just, you know, forms of mass media that have really kind of infiltrated your creative writing brain while you've been coming up with your stories?
I have a wide range of interest. So I am a comics guy, didn't read a lot of comics. I am an anime guy, read a lot of mangas. I am a movie nerd, and a, you know, 90s live action television nerd who watched, like, the Buffy the Vampire Slayers and the Sabrina the Teenage Witches. So it's a wide range of influences that I have that kind of stuck with me. Let's see here. There is, of course, the OG Buffy the Vampire Slayer was definitely an influence. And then I think the later, like, spinoff series Angel was definitely an influence, at least the way I approach. approach writing, well, the humor I want to put in some of the characters. And
yeah, I actually enjoyed the Angel series better than Buffy.
I think I did.
Yeah, I watched a lot of Buffy as well, but my wife and I just binge watched back in the day, like before we had kids. We just, when people would buy like DVD box sets and stuff like that, we bought, I worked at the time I was working at a used music and movie store. So I picked up all the Angel series box sets and we just binge watched it. At first my wife was like, I don't know if this is really my thing. And then by like season two, we were just totally glued. And by the end, it was really cool because they were taking chance. They were doing things with the medium that I had never really seen done before. And now, obviously, all that stuff is kind of shows like Supernatural that everybody goes crazy about. Anything that the CW puts out, it all kind of feels derivative to that kind of Buffy and Angel formula.
I mean, with the CW, I feel like they have more inspirations from like Dawson's Creek than anything. It's from that
maybe
romance era.
I mean,
it is kind of scaled towards the supernatural dash superhero stuff.
So they'll take the kind of romance tropes and they'll throw it into something to disguise it as, you know, something more supernatural or more superhero or something like that. But at the core of it, that kind of Dawson's Creek sort of romance style thing is always underlying, and they definitely know their audience too.
Yeah, I mean, I ain't hating on it.
No.
The Arrow for like two seasons, Flash for one really great season.
Yeah, my daughter and I, my daughter's 9, and we've been, she watches The Flash, like she loves it. I started watching it, but it's always cool when you can like watch a superhero show with your kid. So we've turned it. It's a little what they do with all the different multiversal stuff, and it's well done. I think it's well done, but I think that Angel is still probably one of the few times where I felt like I wanted to binge an entire series in like a week.
Oh yeah, I don't think I've ever rewatched Angel, but I definitely have vivid memories of watching Angel and being excited for like a new episode every day.
Yeah, no, 100%. Let me ask you. Yeah,
go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you, what takes up most of your time when you're not working on creative projects and writing?
Well, right now is work. And when I'm not at work, I generally try to relax playing video games. I don't know, my taste in video games is kind of scattered as well as my taste in media. So sometimes I'll play some League of Legends. I like doing weird things. And I feel like that game's a good sandbox for doing like weird builds and stuff like that. And then you play certain RPGs also because of the sandbox nature of the RPG, structured. Whereas like, right. I want to see if, like, okay, good example. The Witcher, which is basically a sword and, you know, fire fantasy, right? Bring a sword, throw a fireball, you're good to go. But this actually, if you tech it just right, you can make a build. You basically walk around as a tank that throws grenades.
Nice. You see, that's
Hey, go ahead.
That almost reminds me a little bit of like whenever I think of that big open sandbox gaming style, like I always think of Minecraft, which like my kids are into. For my kids, it's like the bigger the sandbox, the better. You know what I mean? For me, like I like to walk straight, hit something, jump a little bit, and then fight a boss at the end. Like I'm like kind of an old school gamer. So even with the newer systems and stuff, I'll always like look for those old school game expansions. The graphics in games like The Witcher and the Assassin's Creed series and stuff like that are phenomenal, And there's always something that draws me in to try and play them when I watch, you know, professional gamers or like, you know, gamer YouTubers play them and they make it look so easy. and then as soon as I try and sit down with it, even like that, those newest like Zelda games and stuff, it's just like, okay, where do I go? What do I do? And I'll turn it off and I'll put on something old school.
I mean, I feel you. I'm definitely a product of the 90s when it comes to video games. Old school video games for me is like Mega Man.
Yeah. That's exactly what I mean. Like the Mega Man series. Like I have like every single Mega Man series. Like you can get them all, you know, I have a Switch. Like I'm not a hardcore. Like I use my Nintendo Switch, so I'll download the Mega Man games and I'll download like you know, the old Super NES games and stuff. Like that's my era anyway. And that's kind of what I play, but I definitely understand it, and I know that in the fantasy and sci-fi writing world, gaming has infiltrated so much. More lit RPG sort of genre has become so massive.
I am a big fan of Final Fantasy VI, or what people have had to call Final Fantasy III. I think it was the last Final Fantasy game made for the Super Nintendo. And that's also a huge influence for a lot of what I do. And as far as like capturing that aesthetic and capturing that feeling of playing a game that. So like, But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Everyone has their golden age when it comes to like entertainment. Me was always going to be the 90s, late 80s, all of 90s for me.
Awesome. Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to broaden my horizons, but you know, with life the way it is, like I find that if I'm gonna take the time to do something that I'm not doing enough of, it's probably gonna be reading, because I find lately that I haven't even had a chance to do any reading, and reading is like kind of my first love. But what I wanted to sort of touch on is because you've chosen to self-publish. What has been something so far, and I know it's obviously still fairly new, but something that you've taken from the experience that you can already say you really love, and what is something that you can say has been sort of either surprising in a negative way or something that has challenged you more than you expected?
Oh, okay. I'll have to say that... want to self-publish a book, run. Run very far. Run and keep, don't stop doing it until you can turn around and go, maybe this is another way. But no, it's fun. It is a little stressful because if you're a first time, remember like myself, everything is very new. And you're taking something that you consider your baby, and you're, you know, investing in your baby. So, like, there is some money spent, you know, investing in your baby, getting it to the point where it's like, oh, okay. And you're not ever particularly sure, like, you know, the value of what you're doing. And you can do, like, a lot of research, and you can, you know, try to find a perfect match for what you're trying to do. But between the variety of services out there and the variety of formats, I didn't realize that there's a separate format between ebook and paper.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's very cool right now if you're publishing, you know, through KDP and doing it that way. First of all, there's a lot of science to it too. There's a lot of getting the or mathematics anyway. I think that in the indie world, it's the art that will determine whether a writer has staying power. You know, at the end of the day, there are mathematical and scientific ways that you can incorporate to get a book to the top of the charts for a couple of weeks. And then at that point, once you get all those readers and once you get all those impulse buyers that are clicking, then it becomes up to you to sell it with your work. And there's no, there isn't really a right or wrong. But there is a right or wrong, but it's not like, if you don't get it right away, it's not over. You know what I mean? There are different tactics and different ways to go about it. And, you know, if a launch doesn't hit the way you want, then you can, you know, pull it and try again. And use a different tactic. So I see what you're saying. I mean, I've come at once as somebody that has helped people achieve higher rankings, and also as an author myself. So I've kind of seen it all. So I see what you mean. It's definitely, and there is so much competition. There are just so many. You know, anytime you look at recommend some indie fantasy in a thread on a large group, you'll get like a thread that goes like for 200 pages. Everybody's saying, hey, read my book. So it's figuring out what makes your work unique and the right ways to go about getting it in the right hands. And it is fun, but yeah, I agree, it's also very challenging. What is next for you, and do you have a timeline for it?
Well, when I get going, I get going at a pretty good pace. I'm not sure that's a good or bad thing. right now, I have some headway on a book 2 for the Boy King series. Let's just say that I am going to ruin Christmas for a lot of people. It's my least favorite holiday as it is right now. So. There's that. There is a science fiction story that I actually want to publish at some point in the semi-near future. There's a concept that I wrote a long time ago that I've been slowly tweaking over time. But the idea is that there is a future version of Earth where humanity has left for the stars, and they decided to turn around and come back, and they find anamorphic animals there, and we even become more tolerant as a species in our time and space. So bad things happen from there.
Anything with talking animals is right up my alley, especially
there's a lot with talking animals.
Nice, especially if they swear every once in a while and like to drink beer.
Yes, there is lots of swearing and beer for full milk.
Awesome. Sounds right up my alley. That sounds super cool. You'll have to let me know about that when it's something that is readable. William, where can people find you online?
I am currently Googleable. Just type in my name. You can just add me on Facebook or on Instagram, or you can follow my author's page. You can also just type in my name, and the TCHA TCHOU part is going to trip a lot of people up, but I promise you it's supposed to say that too. So you can use awesome. That I also have an author's page, so just follow me on any platform that you feel comfortable with.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, nobody's ever been able to pronounce my real last name, which is the reason I go by Michael Evan. Evan's actually my middle name. When I grew up, I had a speech impediment, and I couldn't even say my last name, so it didn't help getting other people to be able to pronounce it. So we will drive that tattoo into people's heads when they see your last name, and eventually everybody will get it.
I mean, if you mispronounce it first, I mean, at least you tried.
Yeah. William, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Looking forward to everything that you put out, especially that sci-fi story. Sounds awesome, and continued success with your output, and keep us posted on what you got going on next.
Well, we'll do. Hope to be working with you guys more often. This is fun.
Absolutely. Okay, have a great one.
All right, you too.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my satirical fantasy novels on Amazon. Need help finding readers? Connect with me on Facebook in the Fantasy Sci-Fi Focus group or at authorsinfocus@gmail.com. You can find more episodes of this podcast at fantasy-focus.com and where your favorite podcasts are hosted.